This is a production of Cornell University.
Vishal, can you call the roll?
Sure.
Thank you.
Editor of classes?
Absent.
Jordan Berger?
Absent.
Oh, sorry.
Linda Kopman?
Absent.
Yes.
Mary Ann DeRuth? Kevin Fish?
Present.
Martin Hess?
Here.
Rebecca Hurst?
Here.
Robert Howard?
Here.
Gabe Kaufman?
Here.
Jeremy Cruiser?
Absent.
Ellis Lowe?
Absent.
Mitch McBride?
Here.
Manisha Munasinghe?
Here.
Sarah Park?
She'll probably be late if she's asked.
Nate Rogers?
Late, you're coming.
Ulysses Smith?
Absent.
Charles Van Lone?
Here.
Rena Winarka?
Here.
All right, so how many is that? That's just four, right?
It's 10.
That's 10. Okay, so no one leaves. So first on the agenda is the call for late additions. Does anyone have any late additions to the agenda? No late additions. Okay, Jordan Berger actually has requested that she knew she would be late. She asked me if we could move into executive session to discuss confidentiality issues with members of the assemblies. And so is there a motion to add that to the agenda?
Motion.
All right. Is there a second?
Second.
All right. Is there any dissent? Seeing no dissent, the agenda is amended. We will move into executive session at the end. Next on the agenda is the approval of the January 31st meeting minutes. Does anyone have a copy of the meeting minutes? Does anybody have any issues with the meeting minutes?
Just the spelling of my last name is lowercase d.
Okay.
Thank you.
Is it okay if we approve them anyways?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. Is there a motion to approve the meeting minutes? Is there a second?
Second.
All right, is there any dissent to approving the meeting minutes? No dissent. The meeting minutes are approved. Okay. First is assembly reports. We will start, let's start with a member from the employee assembly, seeing as Ulysses is not here.
All right. Give me a second. I don't need any information.
Okay. Jordan, she's not here. Mitch, do you want to go?
So right now, the student assembly, last week they dealt with a resolution on faculty ideological diversity that got voted down. Coming up on the pipeline, we're preparing for elections, and so we're getting our election committee fully staffed, fully briefed. Those are kind of the big things here.
All right, any questions or comments for Mitch? No. Okay. Charlie?
So I had a fun meeting last week. It had two parts, both of which were sort of open mic. One was to look at the Arts College review of curriculum, and that's important because it touches all the colleges, so we had a discussion about that. And then we had a discussion about how the university should respond to the Washington, D.C. event. And the Global Cornell website is great for all the immigration-related stuff, as you probably know. But what we have to work on is other things relating to possible changes in research funding and all those sorts of things. And we're working on trying to have a similar kind of website where people can go and find out what the score is, perhaps, in their area. Then the calendar committee is on the verge of uploading to the community 8 possible calendars. We have 2 possible fall calendars, 4 possible spring calendars. We're going to do a fancy survey where everybody can take a look at those and send us their comments. In the fall, we just did single-issue stuff. We've looked at all that and now come up with these proposals. So that will be out there for towards the end of February for about a month. And then the committee will deliberate and we go to the end game and stuff like that. So that's what that is.
Okay. Any questions or comments for Dean Van Loon? None. Okay, then we will move on to someone from the GPSA. Who wants to go?
Okay, I can go. So we had one meeting last week in which we passed Resolution 8, which was in support of
President Rawlings, the Graduate School, and ISSO's reaction to the executive order related to the immigration ban. This week we had Resolution 9, which was asking the Graduate School to make a commitment to all current and future or accepted graduate students in this class that if for whatever reason they are not allowed back into the country, they can at least work with them so they can complete their degree. Resolutions that were introduced, we had Resolution 10, which is asking for a clarification on workers' compensation and medical leave coverage. We had, and then Resolution 11, which is a standing rule thing, so maybe not that interesting for us. And then Resolution 12, which is about allocating money to a graduate student group called Advancing Science and Policy, Advanced Science and Policy ASAP, money for, they're trying to organize and buses to send graduate students down for the March for Science. So that's mostly everything we dealt with.
Great. Questions or comments from Manisha? No. Okay. We will now move into committee reports. Ed is running a little bit late. Kevin, do you have anything regarding the executive committee or your that you'd like to add?
No, I was just going to do it under the liaison report.
Oh, okay, then I'll add to it now. The only thing I had to add regarding the executive committee is one, the Transportation Hearing and Appeals Board, we were informed by the Office of the Assemblies at the beginning of the year that that was defunct. It turns out that that is actually not defunct, and so we're going to start trying to appoint members, so ask your constituent assemblies to begin appointing members to that so we can start addressing some traffic appeals. The only other issue is we're still working with the office to get access for the officers of the executive committee to get access to the dashboard. As of right now, I'm pretty sure only Kevin has access, but Ed and I, we still don't have access to that. So we're gonna work on that. That's all I have from the executive. Actually, I have one more thing. But Mitch, did you have a question?
Yeah, you can do yours.
Okay. The only other thing is. I have been, as the chair of the UA, I have been invited to the Board of Trustees meeting next month to give a presentation. It's going to be about 8 minutes. If there is anything of particular concern or importance that you think I should talk about, I would be happy to meet and discuss that with any of you. So just let me know. That's March 24th. That's all I have.
Can I ask a question about that?
Mitch was first. Then you can go.
We'd be having a normal meeting of the UA members or representatives with the trustees, wasn't it?
Yeah, they'll have to reach out to me. I don't reach out to them. Usually they reach out to the chair. So maybe they will. I hope they do. I'll work hard to schedule it.
I think last year it was arranged by the Office of Assembly.
Okay.
So then you would ask Gina. I think that would assist them in reaching out.
Okay, I will be sure to have Gina say something. Sound good?
Sounds good.
Great. Okay, Mitch.
I would ask the exec board to accumulate information on the budget committee that this assembly used to have, and then we did away with it a long time ago, where we had access to university finances and we could make sure that the administration was accountable. As we see that the tuition keeps increasing, I think that it's important that we are an external check on the administration, so I think that should be looked at.
Okay, thank you. Other questions or comments? No. Okay, Campus Welfare Committee. Ulysses isn't here. Is there someone else from the committee who would give a report? No. All I know is that he sent out a poll today regarding setting up times.
I'm a member of that committee.
Okay.
I think that since our last meeting.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. Infrastructure
committee. We're currently reviewing a potential resolution in Cornell commitment to web accessibility. In addition, we had some issues with members being able to be involved because of distance and getting on campus for several of our campus. So we're in the middle of running a poll on best methods to make sure that everybody can stay involved with the committee. So more on that as we get some answers.
Great. Questions or comments? Nope. Okay. Then we move on to Mitch, Housing Judicial Committee.
Thursday from 12 to 1. I'll send out an email. We're waiting for the location from the Office of Assemblies. The JA has brought up to me that there's a problem in the code regarding the definition of a student and how that applies to students who come to summer camp during the summertime and whether there should be campus code of conduct application to those students. So we're going to be considering that because the new discrimin committee. We're also going to be finishing up transcript notations and hopefully get that to you soon. We'll also be staffing the UHRV boards this semester. I think there was one other thing, but I think that's it for now. Yeah.
What's the status of our transcript notations at this point?
It's still in draft form, so we're getting input from community members and the committee members. So at the next meeting, we're going to make amendments to it, and then...
What's the best way to provide feedback on that?
Do you have the most updated version?
I do not.
Okay, I'll send that to you. I'll have Gabe send it to the assembly, maybe, and then you email me. I can go to the committee.
Sounds good. Yeah, if anyone would like to provide feedback, all UA members are welcome to attend any UA committee. So feel free to go. Ask the chair when the next meeting is. Any other questions or comments for Mitch? No? Okay. Then we will move on to liaison reports, policy advisory group. Serena?
The group has not met since last time, and the meeting that was scheduled for Monday has been canceled, so the next scheduled meeting is March the 20th.
Sounds good. Jordan's not here, so skip that. Campus Planning Committee.
We met last week, I believe it was.
March 3rd.
We're both there, and as I remember, there are three major parts to the meeting. The first was a report on the new solar development that Cornell wants to put out to the 10 megawatt facility in Dryden. Second part was sort of a general update, I think, on campus planning relating to the outside view of the campus, if you will, gateways to the campus and things of that sort. And the third part was a very detailed update on an outdoor art project that will be near the College of Human Health.
Yeah, just some detail, a little bit of detail about the solar one, because I think it's useful to have the record. It'll take, the sites are off of Dodge Road, which is near the Pheasant Garden, the Pheasants Raising Facility. None of you know where that is. It's a nice run. So those of you who are runners, but it's also, you know, a nice walk. And it's just out past the parking lot by the vet school. Go all the way out and take your first right, and you'll get in the general area. There's one going to be off of that, and another one, a large facility, going to be up on a hill behind where the horses are pastured up there. And the second thing, yes, that is.
Where is that on Dodge?
Well, it'll be, if you go up Dodge, there are houses on the right-hand side, and there's a lot of fields on the left-hand side, and a couple of those have been allotted as possible buildings. The nice thing about it is there's a huge power line that goes right past it, a nice power line that can connect. That's one of the conditions for these large installations. And the second thing we talked about, which was really fairly useful for folks, is the improvement of East Avenue. East Avenue, they recognized the problem of congestion on it, which somebody likened to urban streetscape, from especially Day Hall down to the Campus Road. It is Campus Road that goes up the hill, right? And so there have been improvements from Day Hall back to the bridge, but this will be a major project for Day Hall up to the and it'll be a considerable amount of work digging. A lot of utilities are buried in it. They're going to get rid of a good portion of the green space that's on the sides and widen the road somewhat so that they can have bus pull-offs for the town, things of that sort. And they're going to improve lighting, and there's a big discussion about that because and once they get a sense of how to improve the lighting, which mainly involves lowering it down to 10 to 15 feet above the ground, so that people can see people crossing it and things of that sort. doing that, they will probably retrofit the lighting from Day Hall to the bridge, so that that becomes a better, more safer environment for mixed traffic and pedestrians, bicycles, and cars and buses and things of that sort. And I thought I'd inform you that at the December meeting, which I didn't attend, I think we were at, there was a discussion of BB Lake Road, or Barstone Drive it's called, and that will be reopened, reworked on the whole gorge side will be shored up, so that in the summer and fall of 2017. And one of the things that, you know, I guess as a campus as a whole, we can think about is, you know, how these projects with roads very often create jam ups, but there's going to be a significant amount of thought to planning, so that it isn't all at once and it's phased in such a way that, you know, the proposal is that it won't cause massive problems in terms of getting around the campus, that portion of the campus.
Just one other detail on the photovoltaic cell, that the facility will be built on Cornell land. It's land that was once agricultural but has not been used by University of Quick for some time. So they went to some effort to pick land that's really appropriate. I think it's a good use for it. Cornell will lease the facility, which will be built by a private developer, and then the electricity will actually be sold on the free market to the grid. So Cornell will get what they call RECs, credit for the renewable energy. We actually will not be getting the energy itself. It's the equivalent of us. 30% of our electrical use. So it's a step in the right direction, but it doesn't take us long for we need to.
30% is quite a lot.
Except that we're not using it. So we're going to continue to generate our electricity from natural gas while selling that to the grid. But it's good for the community for sure, and gives us some credit. I guess it's good. Good.
Other questions or comments for Bob? No? All right. Then let's move on. I think, Kevin, you had something you wanted to add to the liaison report.
Oh, absolutely. So, because we really haven't had much. I'm transportation liaison. But for the transportation hearing and state and appeals board, I just wanted, because I know Gabe probably hit most of that, but it does not have to be an assembly person. It can be someone that your assembly appoints. So I just want to make that clear. So it's two for the SA, two for the GPSA, and then four for the employee assembly, and then faculty. So it is really necessary to have this. So far we've had about 20 people wanting to go beyond the appeals of the transportation. And so since we don't have it, we really need to get it back up and running and stuff. So if you can go back to your assemblies and get those people and then give us the names and stuff that we can get this going, would be a great thing.
Okay. Questions or comments for Kevin? Mitch?
Did Susan Assembly appoint our two people? Did he get the name?
No.
Okay.
And the other thing that the appeals board does is that also does hardship, which I didn't know. So they do have grants that the board approves for transportation. So it is beyond just the appeals and hearing.
That's a really interesting point, but you know, I've worked here for 32 years and I've never heard of that before, so maybe we should figure out how to get that message out to the community.
Yeah.
That is probably a great thing for us to take back to EA and to each of our constituent organizations, because that's probably that distribution, not what is just packed it down. It's very good.
Okay, great. Any other thoughts on the transportation hearing and appeals board? No? Okay. Seeing as that, we are done with the liaison reports. We will now move on to our business of the day. Right now, our item for business of the day is the annual 2015-2016 report from the
take the lead as director of the office this year.
Well, thank you, Charlie, but I invite Charlie to pipe in any time he needs it. So we really appreciate your time, and we're always very, very happy to be here. We did, a couple of weeks ago, have the pleasure of appearing before the ESA, and so the format that we use there is the same that we'll use here. What I'd like to do is just generally kind of summarize what our role is and make sure we're all on the same page about what that is, make some comments about our annual report, and then what we found really, I think, the most useful is to open it up for questions. So that's what we'd like to do each time. And this is, we're an informal office, I'll say more about that. So please feel free to ask any questions as we move along, and also once I conclude the remarks. I always want to check in because my voice is not loud. Am I projecting loud enough? Everyone here? Okay, terrific. So I know there's copies of our annual report. It's also posted on our website. And we have a one-pager that kind of summarizes things as well that I've found around and that you all have. So in terms of our office, it's a very small office. It's just Charlie, me, and Helen Lang, who's our office coordinator. So she's the intake person for anyone who contacts the office. And basically, in a nutshell, what the Ombudsman Office does is we're an informal confidential resource for all Cornellians, students, faculty, and staff, basically for any problem, conflict, or issue, anything that's interfering with someone's Cornell experience, whether it's relatively minor, like the example that was just given I call it SAB, with the Transportation Appeals Board, and I don't mean to say that it's minor if you owe money and can't pay and so on, but minor in the spectrum of what can happen to us compared to, say, the other end of the spectrum of someone being dismissed from the university. So Charlie and I meet with people on a range of issues from one end of the spectrum to another. So what we do is we engage in problem solving. And so just to give you a little bit more of a sense of the kinds of issues, so for staff sometimes, and actually for us, for everyone, this relates to could be perceived unethical behavior. So sometimes it's really kind of sticky issues that you want a neutral, confidential place to come talk about. It could be for staff office politics, microaggressions, employment issues. Frankly, it's often it's conflicts that employees are having with supervisors, such as there's a new supervisor or it's other kinds of issues and things aren't going well, people need some guidance. Generally, guidance on having a difficult conversation. So those are some, I'll just say, if you will, not that there's any typical issue, but or typical staff issues. In terms of student issues, some examples of things that we see from time to time are questions about exam policy and grading issues, unfair fines, fees, and particularly with graduate students, but it can also be with undergrads. Sometimes there's difficulties with respect to advisors, things not going as well as people would like and wanting some guidance on sort of conflict resolution in that respect. Range of faculty issues, probably number one and two are tenure issues and reappointment kinds of issues for non-tenure appointments. So for all of these kinds of issues, so someone comes to the office, they meet one-on-one with either Charlie or me, or from time to time, we enjoy kind of different areas of expertise and have different backgrounds. So once in a while, Charlie and I will both meet with someone who's visiting our office. And what we do is explain the role and then problem solve. So try to figure out, based on what's going on, what options exist, and then help the person, and we call the person who meets with us a visitor because it's not an advisory relationship, we're neutral. So we try to figure out options, and then we help empower the person to figure out kind of the pros and cons to the various options that exist for the issue. Sometimes it's a matter of figuring out other resources that someone might not know about. We've both been at the university quite a number of years, way, way back. I was a student here, and I've been a staff person here since 1998. And Charlie's been here for how many years now?
graduate student in 1956, but I left it for a while. Came back in 1981. But still, you know, what, 30 years, you get to know where the bodies are buried.
So we provide information on resources, on policies, sort of guidance in that respect, protocols, kind of the sometimes it's sort of culture, if you will. And also, well, I shouldn't say also, but in addition, at the same time, we're just a place to be heard. So if someone is trying, sometimes, and I've had this experience, I think we all have, where sometimes you just come in and with a trusted person, you tell your story. To some extent, you end up, as that person is actively listening, kind of figuring out some of the answers yourself. And so we provide a safe, social place for that. The few things that we don't do, so we're not decision makers, so sometimes people think they can come to us and they're going to plead their case, but we're not decision makers. We're simply here to try to help the person figure out where to go or what to do. I have a legal background. I was a lawyer once upon a time. We're not providing legal advice. And we don't conduct formal investigations. So I'd say that's kind of our primary thing is, as part of Cornell's hearing community, to meet one-on-one with people and try to improve the student life situation and the work situation for faculty and staff. The other thing that we do is that we provide upward feedback. So based on all the information that we're hearing, we report to people, to those in the position of authority on trends. And the idea is obviously to, at a more macro level rather than a micro, meeting with people to try to recommend improvements. So that's in a nutshell what our function is. So kind of moving to the annual report, which is summarized on the back of the handout. So you know, you are our supervisors, and so even though everything that we do is confidential, actually I should just back up. So we're in terms of our tenets. So we're confidential, informal, neutral, and independent. So before, actually just a little bit before I get to the annual report. So anyone who meets with us, their name and anything that they tell Charlie and me is confidential in our office. It will never, ever leave the office with two exceptions. One is imminent risk of serious harm, and then the other is what's required by law that if we were to get a court order or a subpoena, we could try to fight it, but we might not be successful. So we always tell people in the tenants, even though I apologize that I moving on to the annual report, forgot to mention it to you. So we're confidential, we're independent, and that has to do with reporting to you and getting a budget from the president's office. We're an informal resource, again, not decision makers, and we're neutral. So if there's dispute going on, it's not our function to take sides. And certainly if we had a conflict of interest, which is why we very much appreciate that you have an obligation, then we would extricate ourselves from the situation. So moving on to the annual report, so even though matters are confidential, we have an obligation in our guidelines, which date back to the origins of our office from 1969 and then were updated a few years ago in 2013, say that we are to provide an annual report to the community. And that only makes sense that you have a broad sense of, you know, well, what are we doing all day and are we really helping out and, you know, what, getting a sense of the number of people that we're assisting. So over the years, it's typically been between 300 and 400 people that we assist. And the way we count is if one person comes to meet with us, but he or she might come back multiple times, that's still counted as one. And so a complex situation in a multiple meeting, something more of a simple nature might be just one meeting. So this year, in terms of the number of visitors, slightly less than this past year, 376. And we also keep track of the constituency, whether it's academics, whether it's graduate students, and whether it's undergrad. And so over the years, we've typically seen more non-academic staff than any other constituency. But this past year, sort of more notable thing with respect to the annual report is that we saw more undergraduate students. Excuse me. So those are pretty kind of cut and dry, although we actually don't necessarily ask people for their names or their constituency, but it comes up as you're trying to problem solve. You know, know, which of those basic constituencies people are in. But then there's seven problem areas that range from academic kinds of things, administrative, business and service, employment, human rights, interpersonal and values, and ethics. I've given kind of different examples of those. So overall, we tend to say the kind of number one issue is employment and also values and ethics, which have to do with someone's heard, seen something, they're not really sure if it's a conflict or if it's, or they think that it is, they're not really sure how to report it, so we're the conduit to kind of helping the people report and that type of thing. But this area is a little harder for us to report to you on, in that sort of what we're trying, sort of what happened to us and what people are seeking help from doesn't neatly fit into these seven categories. And often, as you can appreciate, there's overlap. So it might be an employment issue, but it's also an ethics issue that maybe relates to interpersonal things or ethics. So it doesn't kind of neatly fit into one category. So that's just broadly what I would say about the annual report. Just a couple other notable things in terms of the past year. So we're always thinking that the term ombudsman is not intuitive and it doesn't, the Swedish word, and people sometimes wonder what it is. So we do spend a fair amount of time engaging in outreach, resource fairs, student orientation kinds of things, staff benefits. We send out an email typically once a semester. We try to figure out the best time for that to happen. We have posters up, and we have invitations to HR professionals, supervisors, and that type of thing about our services. We're always open to any ideas that you might have in that respect. And we're grateful to come here because I consider that this actually helps in that respect. I've had a lot of involvement in chairing our International Ombudsman Association Task Force on Title IX, and sometimes people ask how we're involved in that. So since we're a confidential resource and it's one of our tenants, we are one of the places that people can come for help with respect to Title IX if we're to remain confidential. And there's other offices, of course, that are confidential resources for that particular area. The Human Advocate, the Human Health Center, the LGBT Center, I think I'm missing one particular center, but that's sort of, you know, one piece of what we're involved with. So I think I'm going to pause now, turn to Charlie, and see if I've missed anything, and just kind of open it up to questions. Anything else, Charlie?
I don't think so. I think one of the big issues, though, is this matter of getting the word out, because I think we live in a community that keeps changing. Students come and students go, fortunately. And they graduate, you know. And it's important to get the word out. And the same, some extent, the same thing is true of faculty and staff. And it's not intuitively obvious what we do. And it's a curious kind of game in that my impression is it's feast or famine. There are times when Linda and I sit in the office and there are no visitors. Is it something we said? You know? Or is it just that it just happenstance? And this week, for some reason, has been exceedingly busy. And is it the weather? Is it, who knows? But in any event, I think one of the main issues that we are struggling with is this one of how to get the word out. And so any bright ideas gratefully received.
And I think, you know, my personal bias is what's happened here, what others feel is the more we can actually have conversations and so you see who we are and you explain what we do, it's obviously more helpful than the posters and emails. But I think one thing, you know, builds upon that we're
Echo with the first on the speaker's list.
Thank you for coming. So my question is, I know with confidentiality and anonymity, it might be hard, but do you guys perform checkups on the people in the situation that come to your office after you led them on their way?
Yes. So we always tell people that they can come back. It's not like you just get one meeting with us. And we tend trying to tell people, if you want to let us know what happened, that's totally up to you, but you don't have to. And so we don't typically, as you kind of phrase it, check up on people, but we do it if we're, there's not a bright line, but if we're really worried about a person, it feels that they're particularly at risk for one reason or another in terms of their predicament. And so then we will check up. But we don't keep records. We're not an office of records. So sometimes people give us their email or their cell phone or whatever it is, and sometimes they don't. If it's a situation where I'm particularly worried, I'll ask if it's okay, and I can, and then I will get the phone.
Mitch?
So I guess to help get the word out, I guess I would recommend like distinguishing yourself from counseling, because I think in the eyes of students you're very similar. And so I had two questions about the exceptions. The exceptions always interest me. So have you ever been subpoenaed, and also have you ever used the exception for any of threats? It's a really simple question.
So we've never been subpoenaed. I've been in the office since 2008, and you started calling me. So we've never been subpoenaed, and I mentioned a number of the actors with our professional association, the International Office Association. So it's extremely rare for anyone to get subpoenaed. But we mention it because you hear about attorney-client privilege and doctor-patient, and we just want to be transparent that that's not what we have. But what we do have, which is, I think, very meaningful to everyone here, is we have the understanding at all levels of the university that we're a place that is considered safe and confidential. And so we would never be asked by, HR or the president or the vice president for any information, because this is designated as a safe, confidential place, and it's in our charter and spelled out itself.
I would like to add just one more thing to that, which is that we do not take notes. When visitors come, the desk is empty and blank. And so if we get subpoenaed, all they're going to get when they subpoena me is an elderly faculty member who has grave difficulty remembering anybody's name. And might have some vague recollection, of what somebody may have said sometime in the past. So, in terms of the court of law, we're a pretty broken reed, because all we can do is report what we vaguely recollect from some past event, maybe 2 or 3 years before.
And also, I think we would ask that if we were to get a subpoena, that campus office writers and all of that, but we just want to be open about
what's going on. What about the imminent
risk? Imminent risk is another matter. And there have been cases where I felt, and Linda felt, that there was imminent risk. And in that case, what we do is try and make sure that the risk is addressed. And just to be kind of generic, if, for example, there was somebody who reported sexual predation of some sort, that's clearly imminent risk. And what we would want to make sure is that that is reported to the appropriate authorities so that action can be taken. But that isn't that we investigate it. We just need to make sure that it will be investigated. And so it's a question of following through to that extent. Now, I could imagine other kinds of imminent risks that might.
And again, related to that, so in terms of how we operate and what our tenets are with respect to the organization of business professionals, so it doesn't mean that, say, in the example that Charlie got, that, we are hearing about something that the court hasn't even been investigated, and we're picking up the phone. No, that's not what we're doing. What we're doing is the person has come to see us, and we're trying to create a place where that person can do what they want to do. And so we have had situations where we walk the person, over to the Title IX office or the JA's office or that kind of thing. It would be the very, very, last case say a student who, you know, or a staff member for that matter, but it has been one student, but I'm just extremely worried. And I'm not picking up the phone and calling Jeanette. What I'm saying is, oh, would it be okay with you if we went over and we could make a phone call ahead of time, make sure they're sitting in, and do I have all students over with their permission? So that's the way we're trying to handle it. In a very human way.
Thank you very much. Next on the speaker's list is Marty.
Right. I was just looking at the definition of ombudsman. The second one is the person who investigates and attempts to resolve problems as between employees and an employer or between students and the university. And I'm getting a slightly different feel for the way you interpret that. Much more educational assistance, you know, not entering in. And I'm wondering if it's a particular choice that was made on the part of this office to be that way, or whether this is an overblown definition. Because, you know, I can think of many instances where it would be useful to have someone that could be more of an advocate in a situation. I'll give you one example. I'm thinking about this. For example, if there was a problem of student protest or faculty involved in a protest, a political protest, and could the ombudsman office intervene in a way that would assist someone in protecting their rights or to exercise their constitutional rights, because there isn't really anybody on campus that could do that otherwise. You can't go to the JA and say my institution of special rights. You have to go to a lawyer downtown. And it seems to me, if you're saying attempts to resolve complaints and problems, you're actually taking some kind of action as an advocate, as well as a kind of advocate, but more like a alternative judicial resolution. Was there a choice made on your part to not take that role?
So that's a great question, and I think part of what's sort of complicated about the role of ombudsman in the word is not only is ombudsman, which is a Swedish word, not intuitive, but there's different kinds of ombudsman. So we at colleges and universities, there may be a few exceptions with some colleges and universities, none that I'm aware of. We are what's called organizational ombudsman. And so organizational ombudsman follow the tenets of confidentiality, informality, neutrality, and independence. And back when Gene Kahn, who was the back in the 60s, dean of the art school, who convened a committee that recommended that there be an ombudsman office and came up with a charter, those terms were written in that charter. So we are, yes, we're practicing more in kind of a modern way in terms of what the association's done, but it does date back to what Cornell established for our office. So we're not investigating and that type of thing. It is a role of an ombudsman, but it's the role of a classical ombudsman. It's not the role of an organizational ombudsman. It's kind of a popular role in Canada, actually. There's a lot of ombudsmen that are associated with sort of investigating governmental entities and so on. But that's not what our role is
So I actually wanted to follow up on that briefly, and that is, you talked about the need to get the word out, and this is not in any way a criticism. I sort of understand that as a situation. I just was setting up this other question, which is, the UA is involved in your appointments and so forth. Could the UA be involved, if it seemed to be useful advice, to reformulate the role? Because otherwise, like, as I said, there's nobody who could take on that kind of role without protecting student confidentiality, who is embedded in the university fabric. There's not the university council office, that's for sure. And there is, but it makes sense for there to be somebody who can actually, what it says here is, investigate and attempt to resolve complaints and problems. And then the second clause is, be some action. And frankly, that would help in getting the word out, because it would then place you in a role which is much more less, which is more engaged, if you want to put it that, in the kinds of things that go on in the university that need somebody.
So
of that
I just to make sure I'm understanding the question and suggestion. So you're asking, could we be involved in what in helping
counseling somebody that has a brief over a particular issue that, between an employee and a faculty member in ways that are beyond just telling them beyond
we meet with student secretaries there on any issue. I'm not sure you're identifying issues.
Okay, I'll talk about student protest. If a student is or a faculty member is somehow restricted in some way or counseled in a particular way that they cannot do something or they're threatened in some way, whether or not you could advocate for them and for their rights in that circumstance as opposed to saying whatever you might say to somebody like that.
I would say that at the moment what we would do is talk with that person and try and understand the situation from their perspective and try and give them counsel and advice about how they might proceed. And that is not quite as activist as you described.
Yeah.
And yet it's not passive. I mean,
we're not
just sitting there listening to them.
Right.
We're saying, well, you could go this way, and this might be the consequence, or you could go this way, and that might happen. You got a way which it means you really feel comfortable doing, and we're here to help and support you, but we're not going to intervene.
You're not going to say, if an issue like that comes about, you say, you can do this, you can do that, then the person does that and says, well, I spoke to the ombudsman about it. It's possible that the person on the other side of this argument would just shrug their heads and say, yes, so what?
So here's another way to think about it that might get at your question, Martin. So there's an issue out there, and a student or a faculty member, that person's passionate about it and wants to kind of be involved in the way that you're describing. Our role would be to have kind of, it's more of a personal conversation. So let's just say it's a student. They would be meeting with us and, here's what's going on. We would probably engage in a conversation about kind of their studies and sort of where things are going for them and how this would impact things if they, or not. And it's kind of a more, it's not counseling, as but it's also sort of more personalized in terms of the particular sort of personalized issues for that person in terms of how to proceed.
Would there be an interest in changing from an organization to an advocate?
So I guess what I'm saying is we wouldn't be taking up an issue, we'd be helping.
Right. What I'm asking is, would there be an interest in having the office take on more of an advocating role as opposed to organizational? I'm bringing that up in the UA forum.
I think it's a fair question.
So here's,
the more we get away from what the, and I am certified through a professional association, but the more we get away from not strictly abiding by our tenets, the more I would be nervous that we're not living up to what the actual role is and going into some other role. But I think, could we, in a more sort of macro way, engage in conflict resolution or is there a protest? I mean, those are things to think about, and there are kind of more activist ombudsmen versus sort of less. And these are things to think about, I guess.
Thank you.
Charlie, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yes, I want to add one more thing, which is that over the years, we have thought about the whole issue of mediation, where you get a conflict, whether that is something we ought to be thinking about. And when we had Adam on the staff, who was a trained mediator, we went to the university administration with a proposal to make him full-time and to engage in mediation. And the general feeling was that that was not a useful activity that they could at that point finance. And so we kind of relaxed about that. But it still, I think, is an open question. And it goes partly to what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Because in mediation, one could think about being help in trying to resolve these situations
yeah.
in a more active way. And it's something which we are still ruminating about in a gentle fashion.
Thank you.
Yeah, we weren't telling Joe, but we weren't telling yet. Yeah. So we continue to think about it.
So Linda's up next, but I wanted to say one thing quickly, Marty. And essentially, I think that the role that, and I don't think that the judicial codes counselors completely fill that role, but I think partially the judicial codes counselors serve as advocates on behalf of students, staff, and sometimes students, and sometimes staff and faculty who are accused of violating the campus code of conduct, such as protesting, and they would act as their defendants, per se, on issues relating to that. So I would encourage you to reach out to them, and we can have a discussion with them about their role, too. But now, Linda's up.
I had another suggestion for you. I was a grant writer for years and years, and when I first look at this annual report, this big piece that's missing to me is some kind of evaluation. This seems like this office is very important, could be critically important to an employee or a faculty member or a student. And so I'm kind of wondering if you have some mechanism, two things. One, to do an anonymous visitor survey. In other words, did you feel safe? Did you feel your confidentiality was respected? Did you feel that you got the resources you needed? Was it timely? And then, you know, beyond that, are there resources that you feel are missing? You know, you have 327 people. This past year, we give you incredibly good feedback on whether or not you're doing your job well. And then the other piece is having to do with your visibility. I would almost think it's time for you to do an external evaluation. Are you visible on campus? Are you acceptable? Are you effective? Are you cost effective? I mean, it's just like when I read an annual report like this, that's what comes to my mind. So where is the evaluation team? Who's evaluating you? I'm sure you're doing a great job, but yeah.
I appreciate that feedback. And some offices have done surveys. It's hard to do surveys when not everyone, there's barriers in terms of confidentiality and...
But I mean, an anonymous...
But there are ways to overcome those barriers, and I think your point is very, very well.
And it ties into Marty's thing, because if you started getting a lot of feedback, you know, I really feel like I needed a mediator. If you had 50 surveys that indicated they didn't feel like it was adequate, that would be something for you to go forward with.
Absolutely. They'd like to bring the other party in.
Anyway, I don't know what to do with that, but that's my, just, if you can just start with a survey, that's very anonymous for those who want to.
Hey.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for coming. I have two questions. One is, can visitors meet outside of normal business hours, or are all the appointments kind of made standard 9 to 5? That's something. And the second question is, as I don't have any context for what kind of rate of visitors would be healthy for a campus of this size, or for an office of your size. So I was wondering if you could, with your experience with the Ombudsman Association, if you could kind of frame that for me to say, like, how do we kind of stack up to everyone else?
So we do look at it. Town General Ombudsman look at their annual report. So we are roughly seeing the same number of visitors as other institutions of our size.
And my question is that a healthy number for because I mean, because the implication is like we want to raise visibility and give more people to come, right? But there's also maybe more people don't have to come, which would be amazing.
It's not so much necessarily have more people or fewer people, but make sure that the community
we're willing to meet anytime, we often do. I mean, I have been at 8 o'clock meetings in the morning, and we're happy to be flexible about times. So that's just not an issue.
Yeah, and I mean, weekend and evening hours is to be happy. But, and I've been extra difficult during the lunchtime at the way I was doing it.
Jeremy?
I'm going to be really quick with this, but I'd like to, for the benefit of some of the other folks that are asking more questions, I'll provide a bit of an anecdotal experience. Early in my career, I actually made use of the ombudsman's office. I ran into troubles with my supervisor, which is one of those common things, and didn't know where to go on campus. Now, I will tell you, when I went in hoping for more of the direct advocate for my cause, but what I found was really a valuable resource in the amount of information that your office was able to provide to me about who I needed to talk to, what pieces of information I needed to gather to really provide a case to, and it proved to be actually with HR, and have that discussion there. But it was the knowing who to contact, what the structure of the political system at the university was, and how to, what pieces of information I needed to gather that I found really very valuable for somebody who was brand new to the university at the time and just didn't know where to go for help when something went wrong. So I appreciate that.
Thank you. Okay, that exhausts the first speaker's list. Now, Mitch.
I wanted to give you guys an easy question. How do these work? Physically, though. Is it blood pressure or
temperature? Yeah. I haven't really played enough to know. I can't get it above normal. However angry I get to be.
I know, I think mood rings work with heat, but you're just tense.
Marty, you're next.
Yeah, I just summing up what I was picking up on Linda's point, but adding to it what Gabe has just said about judicial code counselors. I think there are a lot of disputes in the university that judicial code counselors have no place in because they don't necessarily involve judicial experiences. They could be mediating. For example, you weren't going to judicial code counselor if you were interested in them. So I think for student disputes, very often if it has to be, right on the campus code of conduct kind of level. But there are a lot of places where in the university, and that's why having a lawyer there from outside the university is not necessarily valuable, having somebody who knows the quasi-legal structure, you call it the political structure, of university administrative, student, faculty, different graduates, undergraduate levels of students, all these different things, well-versed in those, to be in the room to even to say to you, that's not defensible, or to say to you, that is defensible, and I'm willing to articulate it in a way that you probably don't know because you don't know some of the language of defense making, seems useful. Now, that's different from mediation, although mediation is a valuable function, and I think going more in that direction is at least making an avenue for the ombudsman taking a role that is not present in the university now and really could and should be as time goes forward. That's my personal opinion, but I'm bringing it before the UA because I think this being our purview, we could explore the notion of how one achieves reasonable, I won't say just situations, but just in a generic sense, solutions to problems of disputes on the campus. So I think mediation, thinking about the role of enhancing the ombudsman office to include mediation and verging on advocacy, where somebody isn't there to articulate your position because you believe it. Obviously, you're not defending people you think you're guilty. You're helping them think about, how to advance their position in ways that are useful. So
I would suggest that we bring that up, and if we need to, if I need to be the initiator of it, I'll try and find a way of doing that.
I think Ed, you sure something you wanted to add?
Yeah. This may be to the point. I will make a comment first, which is that the UA itself comes out of the same era in which the Ombudsman Office was created, and to address on a kind of bigger or different scale some of the same issues, the need for a more holistic kind of representation and decision-making at the university. So whether that means that we should take a Marty's charge and shift the role of the Ombudsman's Office, or whether it means that we need to take on some other issues. But I see it as sort of linked in that particular way. Just looking at the report, I do see, and I agree, there's some cases in which judicial codes counselors are not the answer, quite a few perhaps. But I do see that there's a category called employee representatives, and it says, while the Ombudsman's Office does not participate in grievance for procedures, Cornell HR Policy 611-4 states that the Office of the University Ombudsman will assist staff in obtaining representation, or in other words, in obtaining an employee representative. Is it worth maybe taking a minute to explain to us how that process works? Does that address some of these issues, perhaps?
Yeah, actually, it relates to that question. So thanks for finding that. The grievance procedure for non-academic staff says if you want to file a grievance, you can have actually, kind of what Marty's talking about, an advisor, an advocate, and someone to help you out, support person as well, called an employee representative. And that can be someone of your choosing as long as they don't have a conflict of interest. And if you don't have anyone, and the person has to be an employee at the university, and if you don't have anyone, then you can go to the Ombudsman Office and they can help you find someone. So in a nutshell, what we do is we have a list, 7 or 8 people of employee representatives. There are staff across campus. We provide a yearly training for those staff about the grievance procedure and how it works, and how to write a grievance, how to help a person, that type of thing, and then whenever that happens, someone needs an employee rep, and it's sometimes people just come because they need a rep, but often we've gone through the different areas where someone's having conflict, and one of the options is finally grievance, and that's what they choose to do, then we connect the employee to the employee representative, and then they go off and
Great. Thank you. And then Alex.
So my question is about in terms of the data that you do collect. So I'm assuming you don't collect data on how many times you refer to a specific service or whatnot. For example, like how many times you might invite them to go to your university council, for example. Or like people in general.
The only thing that we keep track of are the things in the annual report. So the number of people in the constituency is probably. If we see a trend, and it's a trend that needs changing, then we speak up about that. But we don't keep track of the number that we send off to the office.
No, I was just thinking that like there could be a way to, because maybe if there's a certain office that just isn't as visible on campus.
I just note in the academic employee section that more than half are non-tenure track faculty who come in to the Ombudsman's Office. And the status of non-tenure track faculty throughout academia is a serious seen a measurable increase over time in the traffic out of that category here at Cornell?
No, I would say it's been, over my time there, has been pretty constant. It certainly is something we see for lots of reasons. And because it's a tough spot, as you point out. And non-tenure track faculty exist at the pleasure, typically, of the department and so on. And departments can be displeased for a number of reasons. Budgetary, student enrollment, a whole variety of things. Again, our game is to try very hard to be helpful as to what you might do in this situation. And the advice varies dramatically depending on what the situation is.
It's a good point. I mean, I would think that we'd see more research associates and lecturers, as opposed to I'm not speaking to point out, but just in general, that there's fewer protections, if you will. So, and you know, issues of race, and you know, a lot of grants. And so it's interesting that you see the same number.
Yeah, I mean, my sense is it's justification, right? My sense is that adjunctification has not happened to the same extent, not just in my department, but throughout Cornell. It's happened throughout academia. But one thing that we've discussed in this room, actually, is that lecturers, adjuncts, et cetera, really don't have a channel for representation into the university assembly because they are not actually represented in the faculty and senate. So I don't have a solution for that. We have not come up with a solution for that, but it seems like you all might be the only sort of representation they have.
When I was on this distinguished body many, many, many years ago, when the dinosaurs, you know, were roaming through the basement, that was an issue we discussed at some length, and I don't think we found any satisfactory solution to it. And I don't honestly know what it might be, but my only point is this is a discussion which has gone on for a long time.
Okay, well, that exhausts the speakers list. So with that, can we thank Charlie and Linda for coming? All right, thank you. I appreciate it. So the next item on our agenda is the late addition to the agenda. The only thing that was added as a late addition to the agenda was the executive session regarding confidentiality and members of the assemblies. So with that, if you are not a voting member of the assembly, please be excused.
This has been a production of Cornell University on the web at cornell.edu.